We can't really call it to order because we don't have a quorum, but we will call a quorum once we get, I think, one more person. A couple of announcements we've got to do in a minute, but before I get there, number four on the agenda, introduction of committee rules and procedures, are in your folder, your save folder. If you talk to me early, before committee starts on the rules, we're all adults here. You've all been, most all of us have been here at some level or another or on committees. We all have to work together to get a good bill done. So just talk to me if you need to get an amendment in that's not over the top. I've seen a few of them around this place. We'll try to work something out there. You're all grown-ups here. If you don't show up for the meeting for some reason or another, you will be excused. I'm not going to play this game.
I don't have to go in like this?
Bob, you never have to wave too hard. So, anyhow, unless there's questions on it, then we can go over them tomorrow, later on today if you want to take a chance. If you don't want to pay attention to our illustrious commissioner and read the rules while he's talking. But having said that, I'm going to ask the commissioner to come on down. I guess we have a quorum now. So, Mr. Representative Gunter, would you approve, move the minutes?
Chairman, I certainly would approve this wonderful minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Are there any corrections or additions to the minutes? Seeing none, all those in favor of approving the minutes signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Not approved, same sign. Minutes are approved. Commissioner Kelly, the last time I saw your presentation, you did not have the computer. We got ours figured out here, so hit it. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman and members, I'm Steve Kelly. I am the Commissioner of the Department of Commerce, at least for the last 2.5 weeks, and I'm happy to be here in front of the committee to describe the variety of activities in which the Department of Commerce is engaged. And I will try to go through, forgive me for speaking quickly, I'll try to go through this quickly and leave plenty of time for questions from the committee members. So the department's mission is to protect the public interest, advocate for Minnesota consumers, ensure a strong, competitive, and fair marketplace, strengthen Minnesota's economic future, and serve as a trusted public resource for both consumers and businesses. We have a department of about 350 people, so it's small in terms of complement, but we cover a wide range of industries and services. We regulate over 22 different industries. We license approximately 350,000 professionals and businesses. We provide consumer assistance, conduct fraud investigations, advocate for the public interest before regulatory bodies, deliver federal and state and energy and telecommunications programs, and we ensure equitable commercial and financial transactions and reliable utility services. This next slide is the leadership team at the department, and with me today is our legislative liaison, John Kelly. It's an Irish takeover at the department. One of the areas that the department hears the most about is protecting Minnesota seniors from financial exploitation. According to an Investor Protection Trust Elder Fraud Survey, one out of every five citizens over the age of 65 has been victimized by financial fraud. Another report on elder financial abuse estimates that annual losses across the country range from about $3 billion to $36 billion. Only one out of every 44 cases of financial abuse is reported. The past 2 years, the department has made education and outreach around senior financial exploitation a priority. In 2017, the legislature appropriated funds for us to develop a hang-up-on-fraud campaign aimed at providing outreach and education to seniors on the topic of financial fraud. Since that program was developed and began in November of 2017, the campaign distributed over 32,000 senior fraud prevention toolkits, held 109 outreach presentations and trainings in 33 counties across Minnesota. Now, as part of that education campaign, developed some videos, and Mr. Chairman, this is a place where we did hit the limits of the committee's technology, because we cannot play that video for you, but it was a video that we developed for the state fair, and members can check it out online. We'll make sure the link is available.
Commissioner Kelly, sometimes I would really like government to run like a business. Our computer system is so bad in this particular area. But it could be better. It just needs a number of legislators to be determined to get our computer systems up and running and in better shape with better software. Please continue.
Thank you. Here's one story of a success in protecting consumers. I'll call this 90-year-old Minnesotan Joe, just for convenience. A fraudster convinced Joe that he had won a sweepstakes. Before claiming his winnings, though, Joe was told that he had to send in money to pay advance taxes. Joe sent a letter containing three money orders totaling $1,100 to an address in New York. He then was thinking about it and realized that he was probably the victim of a fraud and contacted the Commerce Department. An agent from our Commerce Fraud Bureau got in touch with a counterpart at the Postal Inspection Service, and thanks to quick action, the Postal Service was able to intercept the letter in New York before it reached the target address. A few days later, the Commerce Fraud Bureau agent was able to return the money to Joe. What's worth noting is that the senior in this story called the new financial exploitation line created after the passage of 2018's Safe Seniors Financial Protection Act. Under that new law, broker dealers and investment advisors are authorized to report suspected financial exploitation against a senior or a vulnerable adult client to the Commerce Department or the Minnesota Adult Abuse Reporting Center. If the broker dealer or investment advisor suspects a fraud is occurring, they can also put a hold on a transaction and disclose their concerns to a trusted third party. The department also has a telecommunications unit that advocates for Minnesota consumers and the public interest before the regulatory bodies governing telecommunications. It reviews filings made with the PUC by telecommunications companies in compliance with our laws, PUC orders, and regulations. It investigates complaints from the public, local governments, and telecommunications companies about illegal, unfair, or anti-competitive practices, and takes action to enforce the statutes and regulations. The unit investigated 571 telecommunications complaints in 2018. We also administer the Telecommunications Access Minnesota program, which delivers free services to persons with hearing, speech, or physical disabilities through the Minnesota Relay. We also fund specialized telecommunications equipment distributed to Minnesotans with disabilities. You may have read in the paper or seen on the news recently the investigative report on Frontier Communications the department filed with the Public Utilities Commission on January 4th of this year. The report's the result of a Commerce Department investigation authorized early last year by the PUC, which had received numerous complaints about Frontier. The next step in the process is for the PUC to consider the results of that report, and once they've made their decision, the department will be involved in carrying out the PUC's orders. If you have any question about this situation, please let us know, and we'll try to respond with more detail as you would like.
Commissioner?
Mr. Chairman.
Would you prefer to take questions as they come up or wait till you get through your whole...
Mr. Chairman, I'm happy to do it any way you and the members would like to do it.
Weren't you a senator at one time? I mean, this... Representative Eklund, did you have a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner Kelly, on this frontier thing that's going on, excuse me, have you... Has the department checked with other states? Because Frontier's having troubles all across the country. So are there similar actions going in other states on this thing?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I don't know the answer to that question. I can get the answer to you by consulting with our telecommunications team.
Right. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Please proceed.
Mr. Chairman, members, we also have an enforcement division that carries out actions related to the industries that we regulate. The enforcement division works to ensure that businesses operate in compliance with Minnesota law. We conduct civil investigations, criminal investigations, and securities-related registrations and examinations. There's a civil investigations team, securities unit, and then the Commerce Fraud Bureau, which I mentioned earlier, that carries out criminal insurance fraud investigations and is regarded as one of the best white-collar crime units in the Midwest. In 2017, the Minnesota legislature reallocated $1.3 million to the insurance fraud prevention account that previously was transferred from the automobile theft prevention account to the general fund. This provided much-needed budget stability to the Commerce Fraud Bureau and allowed us to hire two additional special agents and two newly created analyst positions. The additional funding was extremely helpful. During 2017, the Fraud Bureau initiated investigations into 2,400-some cases, representing an 11% increase over the prior year. These investigations resulted in prosecutions of individuals who were responsible for committing crimes with an economic impact of more than $163 million on Minnesotans. The Commerce Fraud Bureau also administers the Auto Theft Prevention Account and Grant Program, which partners with local law enforcement to reduce the incidence of auto theft across Minnesota. I want to take a moment to highlight an additional story about the good work of the Commerce Fraud Bureau. In September of 2018, as a result of an investigation by the Commerce Fraud Bureau, a Twin Cities construction contractor was charged by the Hennepin County attorney with labor trafficking, insurance fraud, and theft by swindle. Ricardo Batteries had hired a dozen workers, undocumented workers who, because of that status, could be exploited. They worked oftentimes 6 days a week, 10 to 12 hours a day, and were not paid overtime. Mr. Batteries also did not have workers' compensation insurance. When one of his workers was injured on the job, Mr. Batteries tried to prevent his getting to the hospital, but the workers' co-workers did take him to the hospital. Mr. Batteries went to the hospital, tried to tell the hospital staff that Mr. Batteries had been, that this victim, the worker, had been hurt at home rather than on the job, but ultimately came out that this was a job-related injury, and our Commerce Fraud Bureau investigated and developed the information that led ultimately to charging Mr. Batteries last fall. So it's an instance where, by working on insurance fraud, we also identify other crimes that can be related to that activity. We also, in working on insurance fraud, identified two Twin Cities chiropractors who were sentenced last fall to prison for their roles in separate multimillion-dollar insurance fraud conspiracies. These were investigations conducted by our Commerce Fraud Bureau and the Federal Bureau of Investigation. The chiropractors had devised separate schemes to defraud auto insurance companies by hiring patient recruiters, known as runners, to solicit auto accident victims to attend treatments at their clinics. As a result, the two chiropractors billed millions of dollars to the insurance companies fraudulently. They were sentenced to prison as a result of trials in United States District Court last year. The Commerce Fraud Bureau cases that have gone to trial have a 100% conviction rate. We also have a regulatory and administrative services division that deals with our supporting agency core function like communications, government affairs, financial services, and human resources. And then the regulatory services unit oversees licensing and unclaimed property programs that I will talk about in a little bit more detail. The licensing unit administers application renewal programs for 30 different professional licenses, including insurance agents and adjusters, real estate salespeople and brokers, appraisers, collection agencies and debt collectors, and others seeking to do business across the state. We provide licensing oversight for some 230,000 individuals and companies doing business in Minnesota. The unclaimed property program serves as a lost and found for financial assets belonging to current and former residents of Minnesota. It safeguards, maintains, and seeks to return to owners the approximately $800 million in abandoned property held by the state. Over the past summer, we held our first online auction of unclaimed property from abandoned safe deposit boxes. The slide shows a coin that was part of that auction, but it also included jewelry and collectible items, including a Joe Montana rookie sports card and vintage John Deere tractors. That first online auction was successful. It was conducted by Fahey Sales, a Glencoe-based company. The auction grossed approximately $54,000. A second online auction was held in November that grossed about $44,000. We are required to hold auctions once every 10 years, but we believe that by holding more frequent auctions, we help consumers in a variety of ways. The advertising for the auctions alerts consumers that their property may be being held by the state and enables them to effect a claim prior to any final auction sales. We also maximize the cash value of a property which a consumer can claim after any final auction sale. During the past 5 years, the Commerce Department has returned nearly $180 million in unclaimed property to Minnesotans. We also have a consumer services center, and if any of your constituents have concerns that they may report to the Department of Commerce, the Consumer Services Center would be the place that they would reach first. It's our front door and provides services to consumers who have inquiries or complaints about commerce-regulated industries and licensees. In addition to receiving the complaints, this team helps to resolve disputes between consumers and insurance companies, investigates some complaints about improper claims practices, and also provides outreach and education to consumers about our regulated entities. In 2017, the center responded to over 13,000 consumer phone calls. We also have a financial institutions division that's responsible for licensing and regulating businesses like banks, credit unions, mortgage originators, and a wide range of financial services. We regulate, examine, and license. Mr. Chairman.
If I may ask, the consumer hotline that you were just talking about, do they cover all? I mean, could you be a little bit more in depth about what they cover? Do they cover? You've got this sheet here, which is the key industries regulated by Commerce. Would they be, if our constituents had a concern with, oh, let's go to one of our favorite, the gold bullion coin issue. If they had a concern, would that be where they started, or we send them, or how about energy or telecommunications or credit? I mean, what does that particular group
Absolutely, Mr. Chairman, especially complaints regarding perception that a transaction was unfair or fraudulent. Some of the, John might correct me, but there will be some recipients of services from the department, for example, in the energy area and the low-income heating assistance program, who may directly through that program have a contact point that is not the Consumer Services Center, because they're receiving assistance from the department with respect to their heating bills. So there may be particular consumers or recipients of services who have different contact points more directly related to their concerns. But if that isn't the case, then the Consumer Services Center would be where people would go.
So if it was one of our great retailers in this particular state that a constituent had a problem with, I had a constituent that thought they had to, the only place to go was the Attorney General with this retail issue. Does your consumer information line deal with that?
And Mr. Chairman, it would depend on the type of, not every retailer is regulated by us. Our weights and measures division interacts with grocers, for example, by certifying the scales, but a variety of retailers and businesses are not in our portfolio that we regulate. And I think the responsibility of the Consumer Services Center would be to help a caller to identify what is and is not in our portfolio of industries.
Thank you.
We've been working hard on improving our stakeholder engagement. Last September, we held our third annual Bankers and Credit Union Day to reach out to the state chartered banks and credit unions that we license and examine. It's a chance for them to hear directly from the department on regulatory issues, as well as from outside experts on hot issues and trends affecting those industries. This last year, we also created a banker advisory group and a credit union advisory group that provided additional outreach forums so that we could understand better the issues facing the banking and credit union industries. The advisory groups consist of representatives from banks or credit unions chosen by the trade associations, and also representatives from the industry trade associations. We have commerce staff participating in that, led by our Deputy Commissioner of Financial Institutions, Max Zappia. Both advisory groups have held two quarterly meetings, and we're looking forward to continuing that engagement. The insurance division ensures that insurance companies licensed to do business in Minnesota are financially sound, offer insurance products that are fair with actuarially reasonable rates, and inform and respond to the insurance needs of residents and businesses in Minnesota. We have the 10th largest insurance industry in the United States, over 152 domestic insurance companies that is based here, and 1,300 plus foreign or out-of-state companies. Insurance companies in Minnesota, regulated by the division, hold $349 billion in assets, or held that in 2017, which was an 11% increase from 2015. We have, in collaboration with the legislature, we have been working hard to improve our relationships with the fraternal organizations that provide insurance to members. Minnesota currently has 40 fraternal organizations, and close to a half million Minnesotans are members of local chapters and lodges across the state. The fraternal solvency law that the legislature passed and that was signed by Governor Dayton last session is important. It recognizes the special role of fraternals in the insurance marketplace and the special importance of ensuring their financial strength and protecting their members. The new law passed with bipartisan support, and it was a result of a collaborative process between the department and the fraternal organizations. Minnesota is the first state in the country to adopt this type of legislation, but the passage of the law is also a model for regulators in other states on how regulators and a regulated industry can work together to achieve positive results. Mr. Chairman.
We have a question. Representative Haley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do you also regulate or review long-term care policies? I have some constituents who have had issues with paying very high premiums over a long period of time, and then when the policy was needed, there's so many requirements that the policy didn't kick in.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Haley, the long-term care insurance is in our area of responsibility, and we have an acting deputy in the insurance division who is also our chief actuary, and he's one of the national leaders on trying to address the challenges facing long-term care insurance.
Okay. If you could provide that name and contact information to me later, I'd appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
As this slide indicates, the work that was conducted by the department led to the American Fraternal Alliance recognizing our department as a regulator of the year. So also in our portfolio of responsibilities is the State Petro Fund. The Petroleum Tank Release Cleanup Fund contributes to a cleaner environment and helps to prevent the pollution of our soil and water by providing eligible applicants with reimbursement for a portion of their costs to investigate and clean up contamination from leaking petroleum storage tanks. Since it was created in 1987, the Petro Fund has addressed 13,000 leak sites across Minnesota and paid out $450 million in reimbursements to eligible applicants.
Mr. Commissioner, I have a couple of issues with the Petro Fund, and I would like some background on what you've been doing with that fund, you know, the types of clients and the types of grants that you've issued. That apparently has been moved to another division, so I just want to make sure that the work that's been done through that, because it's been a piece where the communities have used that to help with economic development, cleaning up these old gas stations and places where they can't track back to an insurance company or an owner of that particular plot of land when that leak started or happened. And that's kind of the courts have kind of said you have to go back and find the person who had responsibility at the time of the leak to start doing that. And if you can't clean up those sites, typically they're dry cleaners and gas stations, you can't reuse that particular corner as a place for commerce, whether it's another gas station or, you know, an IDS tower. So I'd like to make sure that I would appreciate some information, more information on what you've done with that fund over the last years. And I'll just leave that with you there.
Mr. Chairman, I will make sure that the director of that area gets in touch with your office to provide additional information.
Thank you.
So the Weights and Measures Division that I mentioned earlier was established in 1885, and we protect Minnesota's commercial markets by promoting and ensuring equity, accuracy, and quality of goods and fuels. We provide precision measurement services to Minnesota businesses, and we certify registered service agents for those businesses and individuals. We support key Minnesota industries through testing lumber and agricultural scales, certifying test chains used to calibrate taconite scales, and enforcing the biodiesel and biofuel content mandates. Protecting consumers to ensure that you get what you pay for, and weighing and measuring devices do not facilitate fraud. We also protect the health and safety of Minnesota citizens and the environment by checking for leaks and the working safety equipment on fuel dispensers. In addition, our inspectors help protect credit card information at the pump by checking for evidence of credit card skimmers as part of their regular inspections. A scale out of compliance by 1/100th of a pound at a cash register can cost a small business owner $6,600 a year. Cracking down on credit card skimmers.
Mr. Commissioner, we have a question.
Yes.
Representative Backer?
Yeah, Chair and Commissioner, you talked about credit cards. You know, there's a business in my district that gets a lot of credit card fraud orders. They report it to the appropriate credit card people. But is that something that you guys would like to know about to find? Because it does seem like they come from particular areas of the country, unfortunately.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, that could be useful. That information could be useful to us in the area where, so our responsibility is not looking for credit card fraud in general. What our weights and measures people do is look particularly for the skimmers that are installed on pumps and other credit card devices that that fall into their inspection services. And through identifying these credit card skimmers, we're able to go after the people who are using those cards, that information fraudulently. And here's one example is that, last year we found over 43 skimmers and in Minnesota. During the 2 weeks leading up to the Super Bowl at U.S. Bank Stadium, Commerce Weights and Measures inspectors conducted sweeps across the metro area. We found a number of devices, and our investigation resulted in the arrest and conviction of three Florida men who had traveled to Minnesota to steal credit card information using skimmers. During the court hearings on that case, the men had admitted traveling here for the sole purpose of stealing credit card information, and they had installed skimmers on pumps at a number of area gas stations, including a BP station in Minneapolis. They then used those forged credit cards forged credit card information to go on shopping sprees, including at stores at the Mall of America, nightclubs, and restaurants. Since they're now having a lot less fun in jail as a result of the work of our weights and measures inspectors and the investigation conducted by the Commerce Fraud Bureau. Mr. Chairman and members, I apologize for the fast pace of that. We cover a lot of territory at the Commerce Department, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Representative Cosby, you have a question? Thank you, Mr. Chair, and if we do have a little bit of time, just for more practicality, when people go to the gas pump and we see the Commerce Department's, they've tested the pumper, how do they actually test it? I'm very curious. Do they, like, pump a gallon of gas and measure?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I'll ask Mr. Kelly to answer that question.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is John Kelly. I'm a government affairs liaison with the Department of Commerce, and I have the good fortune to have the Weights and Measures Division as part of my portfolio. So the Weights and Measures Division, we have 39 light-duty and heavy-duty inspectors, and they're broken up into zones across the state. And they're on a legislatively mandated inspection schedule. They're coming through, you know, your area, the different pumps about every 18 months to 2 years. So they will come in and they will test everything from the fact if the pump is leaking, the seals, and then they will open up the doors of the actual pump itself, and they will test, they will make sure there's no credit card skimmers there, and then they will test the accuracy of the, you know, the where you're, you know, it used to click over in the old days, you know, where you'd see you're getting me and the digital versions of that. They're making sure that a gallon is a gallon and that you're getting what you're paid for. And if it needs to be calibrated or adjusted, they inform the station owner that it needs to get fixed. And if they find, they also test for fuel quality. So they, you know, especially here in Minnesota in the winter, you know, if there's water in the tank or anything like that, they they work with the station owner to get the fuel quality up to par. And if it's not, or and during instances where we have the biodiesel higher biodiesel mandate, they check that content that's enforced at the station level. So they will say, hey, this is B15, it needs BP20. Can you need another delivery? And it's not a, you know, it's not a slap on the wrist thing. It's like a, hey, we're going to tag this. We'll come back, you know, just get a load in and bring it up. And that's how we check it. And they're also in the grocery stores. So if you're at the self-checkout line at Target, you should see our stickers as well. They're making sure that, you know, the scales are accurate there and the deli counters and everything. So pounds of pounds and a gallon's a gallon. That's, we're trying to find equity in the marketplace, both for the business owners and for consumers.
Thank you. That answered a few of my extra questions. And Representative Gunther says the scales are made in Fairmont. How about pretty good grocery work down there?
With his thumb press.
So, Representative Rare, you have a question?
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a couple. Excuse me. Going back, you say you license approximately 350,000 individuals and businesses. Can you give us some examples? I know you work with grocery stores, gas stations, but what would be examples of some of the licenses you actually?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Rarick, I don't know the statistics in terms of who's the largest number, but for example, we license real estate brokers, appraisers, a variety of professionals in the real estate industry. We also, for example, many banks are nationally chartered. We don't regulate those, but we do regulate state chartered banks and non-depository institutions that are in Minnesota, and there are some 6,000 of those. So those would be another example of organizations that we regulate. Mortgage origination brokers, and that...
Bullion coin dealers, insurance, a lot of the agents and brokers in the insurance industry. There's a lot of the wide swath of the financial services sector of Minnesota, their licenses are held at the Commerce Department.
Yep. And then another question. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Going back to the slide where you were talking about the contractor who was helping their employee get the medical coverage, and in cases like that, are you working directly with Department of Labor and Industry? I know and worked with a number of others trying to deal with unlicensed contractors. And would you get that information to the Department of Labor so that they could go after them on that angle as well?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Rarick, I don't know in that particular case whether we engaged in a collaboration with the Department of Labor and Industry. But going forward, for example, the Attorney General's office has contacted us regarding working together with our investigative services. Our goal is not to go outside our area of responsibility. We're responsible for the integrity of the insurance markets in Minnesota, including workers' compensation insurance. So that was the aspect of this individual's activities which brought us into the case. But as I said, people engaged in these kinds of crimes aren't doing just one thing wrong. They're doing multiple things wrong. So it in that case did take us over into some areas that would be within the jurisdiction of the Department of Labor and Industry.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. That's something I think we've seen that the Department of Labor doesn't have all the tools to get out and find all of those things. So I think people would appreciate it, yeah, when you find something, handing that over so that they can go after them. So thank you.
And Commissioner, there are other questions, but I'm going to echo his, Representative Rarick's question. And one of my frustrations is the siloing of the departments, and they don't have conversations with each other. And it's not just you, and it's not you didn't start the particular problem. Hopefully, There's multiples that could speak to each other about, you know, I found this guy doing, you know, construction work unlicensed without any insurance, and you should probably, or I can go down a whole list. I think everybody can. So it is something that all the departments that come through here, and there's a lot of them, that hopefully we will talk about and remind the commissioners that they're supposed to talk to each other. And it's not your and where you're sitting, you need to delegate that to your staff, and maybe it's the staff get together and at least figure out that they can make a phone call. I don't know how the hell that's going to happen, but that is an issue for me in all the years I've been here, the siloing of that.
Mr. Chairman, we're less than 3 weeks into this new...
You haven't gotten it done yet?
...into this new administration. but what I can say is that Governor Walz and Lieutenant Governor Flanagan, for example, even before we started on the job, by convening a retreat to get all of the new appointees at the commissioner level together, emphasized to us their desire that we do work together. And we've got, particularly in conversations related to health issues, I've been enjoying working with the new commissioner in the Department of Human Services and the continuing commissioner in the Department of Health. And I think we'll just be identifying over the next few weeks additional places to collaborate. And I had not met Commissioner Lepink from the Department of Labor and Industry before a few weeks ago, I'm looking forward to the opportunity to work with her when she's able to start the job.
Great. Representative Sundin?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to the Commissioner, I've got a series of concerns on slide 10 there regarding that same case that we were talking about earlier. About the injured worker that wasn't covered by the employer, the illegitimate employer, was he ever made whole for his injuries or medical bills? I'd like to know that. You might not know that right off.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Sundin, I'm going to double check. But my recollection is that he was assisted by a number of charitable organizations. $31,000 of his medical bills was covered by Medicaid, more than $10,000 by Minnesota Care, and an additional $4,200 was paid by Hennepin County Charity Care Program. So, Mr. Chairman, Representative Sundin, I don't know that he was fully made whole with respect to his medical bills, but that's my information about the bills that were covered.
Thank you, Commissioner. Just to be clear, that's about $44,000 out of the public dollars spent to make that person whole because the employer was acting irresponsibly. Clear on that. I'm going to take you back about 30 years now to International Falls, where there's in excess of $500 million project being built up there, a construction project at the mill, and there were no injuries. Not one injury on that job. They didn't dispense a Band-Aid on that job. That's pretty amazing, I would think. But we come to find out if there was an injury on that construction site, they'd put the person in a car and drive them over to Fort Francis and pay cash. So I'm just wondering what penalties are in place for non-reporting of injuries on job sites.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Sundin, I don't know the answer to that question, but that we'll take note of that, and we'll try to get the specifics back to you as soon as possible.
Thank you. Another question, Mr. Chair. False reporting. I know what happens. I know how to do it. I'm not gonna, but I do know how to do this. In the third paragraph, it describes that the men were forced to work long hours for less than market pay. And even if this guy had workman's comp, I'm certain he would report 8 hours a day, and that's it. Can you provide us with information about how many companies have actually, and employers have been charged with false reporting, and what penalties are in place for that?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Sundin, some of that reporting with respect to wages may fall into the responsibility of the Department of Labor and Industry, but we can pass that question on. I heard the chairman's direction pretty clearly. We'll pass that question on to the Department of Labor and Industry to the extent we don't have the answer in-house.
Thank you.
And Representative Sundin, we're trying to get the Hennepin County attorney to come in and go over that particular case and some of the laws that we can and cannot affect, and how we can help tamp that particular issue down. There's way too much. That man fractured vertebrae, and he'll never lift a thing again in his life as long as he's smart. He won't lift much ever again in his life, and that's his life. His way of making a living is construction. He's essentially been disabled for the rest of his life. So, well, we need to address that, and your committee needs to spend a little bit more time on that. Maybe we'll make a joint hearing of the labor and the jobs and economic development hearing.
I'm looking forward to that, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Hassan?
Mr. Chair, Commissioner, just quick question. There are grocery stores and convenience stores that are small that require $5 minimum purchase. Is that something that's legal? If you're using credit card, you have to spend at least $5, or there's a fee that you pay.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Hassan, I think some of those are set by the credit card companies. I'm trying to think back. I recall there were some bills in the past related to ATM fees, and it would be possible for the legislature to take action with respect to that question, but we can check on the details and get that to your office.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
So just to give Representative Hassan a fair warning, they're now booking flights from D.C. to come talk to you. The credit card company. And Connecticut. Representative Gunther.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Fowley, good to see you again. One of the people that you license and test is our cosmetologist. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Gunther, I think a lot of those professions that are in the health related industries, including cosmetologists, is regulated separately. And so my guess is that there's a separate barber board. I don't know whether the barber board regulates cosmetologists or whether there's a separate cosmetology board.
It used to be regulated by the council.
If you don't have that, you're very fortunate. I have a question. You regulate reverse mortgages.
Mr. Chairman, and Representative Gunther, real estate is in our jurisdiction. I don't know specifically whether we have taken any action with respect to reverse mortgages, and I also don't know what provisions the legislature has adopted that regulate reverse mortgages. That is something I can get the answer to.
Thank you.
I have a couple of questions that I'm going to go back to the key industries regulated by Commerce sheet. And energy insurance companies, brokers, agents, state chartered bank. Seems as this is a finance committee, how, and maybe this is unfair after three, with just 3 weeks underneath your belt, but which ones of these use taxpayer dollars versus agency fees or licensing fees to pay for their costs? I mean, insurance companies, I'm sure, there's a fee that they are charged to do business in the state of Minnesota. Does that cover their costs, and we don't have much, many hammers over their heads on that?
Mr. Chairman, at this stage, I couldn't give you a comprehensive answer to that question. I can point to a couple examples that I've been able to get into since I arrived. And so, for example, the Weights and Measures Division, a certain number of their activities are financed by a fee related to the volume of gasoline sold. And so that is a benefit because it's not something that falls on all Minnesota taxpayers. It falls on the people who buy gasoline, and that has been one of the issues facing the Weights and Measures Division is that quantity has not gone up, and we have not increased the fee, volume fee related to that. So the money coming into Weights and Divisions has been relatively stable over the last several years from that fee. We also charge assessments to the financial institutions, and there's ongoing concern about that. Another set of questions appropriate to the work of Finance Committee is that in some cases we assess the fee and it goes into the general fund and then has to be reappropriated to us. In other cases, we're able to retain the fee in the special revenue fund and in essence have a fee-for-service relationship with the industry that is providing that funding.
Commissioner, I am interested in the committee understanding how your department gets financed. Okay. I don't want to add more things to your plate, but if you could kind of go through these key industries, fee for service, what the fee covers and doesn't cover, or how much the fee does not cover, so we understand how we're going to have to create your budget. People should understand that much of this stuff is done by fee. And as you said, it goes into the general fund and then it's reappropriated, which you always come out on the short end of the stick on that. Having been here for a number of years, I do understand that particular piece. And if we are asking a department to do something, I, as a chairman, think it's appropriate for us to cover those costs, if it's a taxpayer-based fee or consumer or industry-based fee versus taxpayers. So some things we want the taxpayers to pay for and some things we want the industries to pay for. And if you can get me some of that information, I'll share it with the committee so they can all take a look.
Mr. Chairman, certainly we will do that. And I will say going into this year's budget situation, it is a sore point with the department that we were the only department that did not receive an increase to our operating budget in the last biennium. So we are looking at ways to make up for that.
Don't worry. There are other departments that got the short end of the stick on their particular issue, too. So we are trying to spend taxpayer dollars wisely. Representative Sundin, you had a question?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner Kelly, the $44,000 in medical bills paid out to that gentleman that was injured, it really troubles me that it landed on the lap of government entities to pay that off. I'm just wondering if there's any way that the state goes after illegitimate players such as this in civil court, and it attaches some damages and recovers some money from illegitimate contractors or businesses. Is that a possibility, or is that another silo for the AG to come in and look at?
We'll get them all in here sooner or later.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Sundin, it's a good point, and we can try to get some more information about that particular case. As I indicated, a significant chunk of the funding came from Medicaid, and since this does get to the chairman's point about different agencies having different responsibilities, but Medicaid is, I believe, administered by the Department of Human Services, so they would have the interest in trying to recover this.
Yeah, if we had a lawyer around here, he'd probably tell you that he or she would probably tell you that the courts will eventually decide who and how that gets paid back.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't want any more lawyers. I want more commissioners in here. So.
I have one final question, and then if there's others. But my last question is, how do you notify people on the unclaimed property? That is an exceedingly popular. One year I spent some time with an intern going through the list and finding as many people from my district, and I thought, you would have thought I was God when I sent them letters saying that, you know, you have money here, and if you want it, your name matches up. You know, everything from $50 to $5, and they just thought I was a great guy. One of the rare times they did.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Kelly would be able to give you a more detailed answer to that question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. So the Unclaimed Property Program, we, you know, within the budget that we have for outreach and engaging with Minnesotans, so we spend, we have, and we can provide them to you and to the committee. So we spend a lot of time, we do advertisements in newspapers. We also have, you know, pamphlets, and we do a lot of outreach at the department level. We spend, we're at the fair, we're kind of carnival barking for folks to come and check if they have unclaimed property. And so they have, we have the laptops set up, and we have them come and look and see the, you know, on missingmoney.com, whether they have funds with that are being held by the state. As you saw in the presentation, we've had two online auctions, and then as you mentioned, the lists, we provided lists to legislators, and we also have a counties can request lists for holders of unclaimed property. So we try to do as much outreach around that area as possible.
I will inform you that I had one constituent that I think their mother had was on the unclaimed property list, and after an afternoon of trying to get all the paperwork together, she realized that the cost of getting her documentation, getting the lawyer to say one thing or another, that, you know, from the estate and a variety of other things, she thought the $500 was not worth claiming, and chose not to do all the backup work because it just didn't pay. So in that particular department, you do need to figure out ways that make it simpler for people to claim that money, because you need identification, you need a certified identification, you need a variety of things that are a real pain in the posterior to get. And so that might be one of the reasons people don't claim it, unfortunately.
Yeah.
There's not you don't need to answer that, just something that you need to look at. Because it is really difficult, but when people get money that they don't ever expect, they are very, very happy, and they think government actually works for them.
Mr. Chairman, we would, you know, certainly coming in new to the department, You know, my approach is to try to identify areas where we can do better. And so if you or other members identify situations where you feel like a constituent was not well served, we'd like to know about that so that we can look at our own processes to see if we can improve them. As you understand, there's a tension because we certainly don't want to give the money to the wrong person. So we have a responsibility to ensure that it actually does go back to the legitimate owner. And if we can simplify the process for doing that accurately, we certainly ought to be trying to do that.
Thank you. Representative Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Welcome, Mr. Kelly. I'll have a just quick clarification on protecting seniors. You referenced that the regulated entities can contact the Commerce Department at the number indicated, but I've had constituents talk about just when their parent was preyed upon and they called local law enforcement and, you know, was not necessarily receiving satisfaction. Is there a number where just normal people can call?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Robbins, that would certainly be in the area of our Consumer Services Center. And as a starting point.
Representative, the number that's listed for the senior fraud, you know, it can be a trusted third party, it can be a friend or relative can also call that number. It doesn't have to just be a financial advisor.
Okay.
And that goes straight to, that's something, you know, we try to fast track at the department, if, you know, especially because these, once the money's gone, it's gone. So, you know, the number's out there, and we have, we can get you a breakdown, but we've had about 30 calls so far since the law went into effect, and that was part of the, kind of when the law was passed, kind of, we're going to kind of see how many of these were coming in. It's kind of a vary between the financial professionals that are reporting it. It's something that doesn't pass the smell test, but we have also had, you know, just folks just calling in and saying, hey, my mom was victim of this, and we try to work very closely with law enforcement on these. This is where our Commerce Fraud Bureau can help local law enforcement. We have the tools to, you know, look through that financial data that maybe a local police officer wouldn't necessarily be able to do.
Perfect. And perhaps you've seen a similar case in a different area that this jurisdiction hasn't. So thank you. That's very helpful.
Welcome, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Cagle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, to follow up on that, is there also a protection service for vulnerable adults, not just seniors?
Representative, Mr. Chair, Representative. So the way the bill was passed, they can report, folks can report the you know, suspected financial fraud to either the Commerce Department number or to the Department of Human Services, the MARC. So that it's kind of an either or, and something where it's a vulnerable adult would best be answered by the Department of Human Services side of it. We're more on the financial aspect of it, and we work collaboratively. It's not, again, to the siloing, but they are going to be able to deal with both. So,
Mr. Chairman, Representative, if it's a financial fraud on vulnerable adult who is not a senior, mm-hmm. that would fall into this area as well.
Thank you.
Did you have anything else?
Well, I just, you know, with a lot of the GoFundMes and things like that, you see that a lot with medical bills that are being fundraised for.
Are there any other questions? Well, hopefully you'll get that information about which is a fee-based and which is a taxpayer-paid, and I'll get that to Travis will get that to all the members and hopefully take a look at that. Seeing no other questions, thank you, Commissioner. I appreciate your day today, and I'm glad you got here safely.
Mr. Chair, members, thank you very much.
Were there any questions on the rules? I see none. So, with that, unless there's anything else, we stand adjourned.